Zayin in Likutei Moran Tanina, where the paragraph begins with the words "Vezehu Mimsim Yodcha Hashem." In our Likutei Morans, it's page 57, the right-hand column, a little bit more than a third down the page. I believe this is where we were up to. Rabbi Nizal had given one explanation about this pasuk, and now Rabbi Nizal is going to further clarify his interpretation of this pasuk in Tehillim. Rabbi Nizal says, "Vezehu mimsim yodcha Hashem." This is what's meant in this pasuk. Rabbi Nizal explains, "Ki yesh shehem meisim miso tivius." There are people who die a natural type of death. Shehem noilodim balechus sharoshius v'shar, because they're born with a certain inborn fluidity within the body, v'shar dvorim keilu, and other ingredients that go into the creation of a human being, other contents, she'al yodom roi lohem lichyois mispar shonim keilu, that it would be considered natural and normal for a person with this much fluid, with this much ingredients, to be able to live for so long a period of time. Lahavdil, as if you have a car that's able to travel a certain distance with a certain amount of gasoline, Rabbi Nizal says there is a comparable concept whereby Hashem creates a person with a certain capacity. Hashem puts so much into the body, where the body, by natural means, in quotes, would be able to carry on for a certain length of time. V'heim miskaimim v'chayim kol oisam ashonim, and these people exist and live throughout this length of time, length of years, ad shenifsak v'nichla lechusam v'chiyusam, until there terminates this fluidity in their body and this life-giving force in their body. V'heim meisim mecheled, and they die from old age or from corrosion, where the body breaks down after a certain length of time. V'zehu b'chinas mimsim mecheled. This is what David HaMelech is referring to when he discusses those people who die from cheled. Cheled means old age, zikna, or cheled means like rust, like by a metal item that becomes rusty from old age, where it can't function anymore properly. That's one type of person, that's one type of death. V'yesh she'Hashem yisporach goyzer aleihem miso koidem zmanon b'shvil oinish. There are those people to whom Hashem presents a gzerah, a decree of death, where because of a certain item that they did, they bring upon themselves death before its right time, in a sense, where the death in this world is serving as a penalty, as a punishment for certain things that they've done. V'zehu mimsim yodcha Hashem. This is the people that die this second type of death, where they don't die from old age, they die by the hand of Hashem, that the hand of Hashem strikes out at them to punish them for something that they did. Ve'elu roi lohem olam haba. And this second group, they're the ones for whom it's more appropriate to figure that they would get olam haba. They would get the future world. Me'achar shemesu koidem zmanon. Since they died before their right time, and therefore they, through this item that Hashem punishes them and kills them before their right time, that serves to clear up any mess that they made in this world, that serves as a purification to prepare them to be able to enter into Olam Haba. So in terms of logic, Rabbi Nizal seems to be saying that it seems that there are these two groups, those people that die from old age, those people that die as a penalty by Hashem, and these people who die as a their death is a punishment by Hashem. By them, it's more logical to say that once they've been punished, they've served their due punishment, they're ready to go into Olam Haba. Avol hameisim mecheled, but those people that die from old age, heim bechinas bnei olam hazeh, they are referred to as people from this world, she'ein lohem olam haba, that conceptually, we don't necessarily assume that they have an olam haba, ki heim chayim v'kayomim bo'olam hazeh b'li shum oinish, because they continue to live in this world and die only at the end when they've come completely to the end of their rope, and then they die from old age. So Rabbeinu is saying it would appear that by some people, when they die by this old age, this represents a concept that that's when they've used up their entire existence completely and they're finished. Finished. Meaning that there's no Olam Haba to go on to. Whereas those people that are getting cut off before their right time, supposedly, before they come to the finish line, where then the death comes before its right time, by them, once they experience the death, we assume that that's a stepping stone to go into Olam Haba. This isn't necessarily something that refers to all people. This doesn't mean that we're saying here that any person that lives to a ripe old age, Chas v'Shalom, will not get Olam Haba. But Rabbeinu Zal is presenting such a concept that looking at these two categories, this appears to be a Ben Olam Haba, this appears to be a Ben Olam Hazeh, a person who's living out his solid term in this world. He's coming to completion in this world. Dahainu b'nei olam hazeh b'nei olam haba. This is also a concept of b'nei olam hazeh and b'nei olam haba, just as we discussed in the previous shir, discussing the first half of this Torah, where Rabbeinu Zal there also discussed a concept of b'nei olam hazeh and b'nei olam haba. People who live, they carry on their life in this world, where their whole purpose is simply what goes on in this world. They're not thinking in terms of any future existence in Olam Haba. They're not thinking of preparing for an existence in a future world. Those people, Rabbeinu Zal referred to before as B'nai Olam Hazeh. The B'nai Olam Haba are ones who are working where they're using their time in this world to gain credits and to gain time and pleasures of Olam Haba. Rabbeinu Zal said that both of these were a bechina of Tamale Bitnam. Both of these were a bechina of people who are looking to get something out of their life. One is looking to get Olam Hazeh, the other one is looking to get Olam Haba. And Rabbeinu Zal said that the real level that a Jew should strive for is to look not to want to get anything out of life, to want to get only pleasing Hashem. That for myself, I'm not looking for anything, even in terms of the mitzvahs that I do. I'm not looking that I should get anything out of it. I'm looking purely to give satisfaction to Hashem. That's my only intent. This is what Rabbeinu Zal explained before. And now he's going to come back and tie together these two sections of this Torah. Rabbeinu Zal says now, V'zehu mim sim yodcha Hashem, mim sim yicheled. The two categories are mim sim yodcha, those that die by the hand of Hashem, in the form of a punishment, being cut down before their natural end, and the others are the ones that die from old age. Rabbeinu Zal says, "Hainu min ameisim al yidei Hashem, v'yesh lahem olam haba." These two categories. The first category, the person that's cut down by Hashem early, where by going through this suffering of death, we assume that that's going to be his stepping stone into Olam Haba. Or this second group of people who appear to finish off in Olam Hazeh, v'zehu chelkom b'chayim utzifuncha. The pasuk continues and renames these two groups of people. The pasuk says chelkom b'chayim and tzifuncha. Hainu beiz kitos hanal. This is another way of referring to these two categories. The first category being chelkom b'chayim, those who have their portion in this life, in the physical life, that's where they get their total portion. And the second ones are tzifuncha, those that are looking forward to that which is tzifun, that which is hidden, which is another nickname for Olam Haba. In the Navi, the pasuk says, morav tufcha asher tzofanta lirayecha. Tzofun is one of the nicknames for Olam Haba. That's this hidden item. Ayin loy roaso elikim zolosecho yase lamachakaloi. One of the ways that we conceive Olam Haba is something that no eye has seen yet. It's something that's hidden from our concept of vision. We can't possibly visualize Olam Haba. So Rabbeinu Zal says now, Hainu beis hakitos hanal sheshneihem bechinas temali bitnam. Both of these two categories are referred to as people who are temale bitnam, people who are looking to fill their own bellies, meaning hainu milui beten b'olam hazeh b'olam haba kanal. One fills his belly in this world, one is looking to fill his belly with the pleasures of the next world. V'zehu yisbu bonim v'hinichu yisram lo'il aleihem kanal. the pasuk continues to say, Yisba ubonim, they will be satisfied, they will have plentiful children, and they will leave over the remainder of their wealth, lo ilaleim, for their children. Kanal, this part of the sentence was also explained in the last year that we had in this other paragraph on the Nikudei Moran. Rabbi Nizal says, the gam mi sheboicher boilam haba, and even a person who sets up his life in such a way where his priority is Olam Haba, he's not living just for this physical world, he's looking to do things that will get him into Olam Haba. And he's looking also to leave over some of his merit for the benefit of his children. Gamze bechinas yisba ubonim vehinichu yisram. This concept of people who have many children and they leave over for their children doesn't just apply begashmias, doesn't just apply to a person begashmias who wants to get married, to be able to have children, to be able to leave over some of his wealth to somebody. That's one concept. That's another Hazeh concept. There's another concept of people who live in this world, get married, have children, and they're looking to leave over some of the zechus of their good deeds for their children, that should also serve for their children. This is also a concept, as Rabbi Nizal is going to say in a minute. Aval ani boicher la'atzmi mi beis hakita. Aval ani boicher la'atzmi mi beis hakita sanal. But David HaMelech says, I choose for myself. Out of these two categories, I choose for myself. What do I choose for myself? Betzedek echze ponecho. The pasuk continues, David HaMelech says, the only thing I'm interested in is getting to see Hashem. She'im kol hatzedoko is sheli, eske lachza is panei Hashem. The only thing I'm looking to gain out of my righteousness, out of my good deeds, out of my kiyum hatayra, is lachza is panei Hashem, to get to see the face of Hashem, and es be'obohokitz t'muna secho kanal, and to get to see the awakening of the t'muna of Hashem, the arousal of the tzelem aleikim. Because Rabbi Nizal before had quoted the Gemara in Yevamos, where the Gemara says that each and every single time a Jew is zeichet to have children, they actually increase the tzelem aleikim, they kaviyochel, enlarge Hashem, they heighten the kavod of Hashem. So David HaMelech said, my only purpose of having children is just to get to see Hashem's kavod heighten. Nothing personal. I'm not looking for any personal benefit. I'm not looking to have somebody to pass on my gashmiyistic wealth to, or I'm not even looking to have somebody to give over my zechusim to. I'm looking only to see Hashem satisfied, to see Hashem's kavod heighten. The imkolze, but still, Rabbi Nizal says nonetheless, toiv ma'oid afilo mi she'oved b'shvil olam haba. We don't want to negate those people who aren't on such a level. A person who isn't unselfish, a person whom you can't present something like this to him, you can't tell him that I want you to live your whole life not for yourself at all whatsoever, not to be looking for any benefit personally whatsoever, to be looking only that Hashem should benefit. Those people who aren't on a level to live like that, Rabbi Nizal says, and they live for the sake of Olam Haba, that's also considered very good in the eyes of Hashem. There's no question that that's very good. V'gam toiv l'hashir z'chusei l'bonov, kemuva. And it's also a good item for a person to have in mind when he's doing mitzvahs and nice and toivim in this world, that part of the reason as to why he's doing it is he wants this to be a protection for his children. He wants this to be able to help his kids even when he won't be around anymore, to serve as a father for them, to be responsible for them, to be able to help them, to have some percentage of his good deeds remain as a shield, as a protection, as a zechus for his children. Kemuva, as is brought in Sforim, she'ein lo'otam l'kabel kol zchoroi, the Sforim bring that a person should have in mind that he doesn't want to take all the reward for his good deeds for himself, Rak yashir mizechusoi lebonav achrov. Elo, he's looking to reserve a set amount, a percentage of the reward, of the merit of his good deeds. He's looking to set it aside for his children, for those that will inherit him. Rak, however, However, Rabbi Nizal says, Shehatzadik tzadikim hashleimim, those tzadikim who are sholem, who are on the highest level of Kedusha, oyhavei Hashem be'emes, those who really love Hashem truly, kegoin David, such as David HaMelech, the seven shepherds of Klal Yisrael, these very, very outstanding tzaddikim, ukeyotze, and those like them, ein boicharin becholze klal. They choose not to have any of this whatsoever. The einam roitzim loy boilam hazeh, loy boilam haba, they're not interested in olam hazeh, in this world, they're not interested in olam haba, v'loy lahashir zchusam v'tzidkosam levneihem, they have no interest in leaving anything over for their children, rak lemalois ritzayna yisporach. Their only interest is fulfilling the ratzayna of Hashem. The only reason why I'm doing good deeds is to please Hashem. I'm not in the picture, my children are not in the picture, no one's in the picture. The only one that's in the picture is Hashem. This is the madrega that these tzaddikim shleimim are on. This is the manner that they serve Hashem. I just want to point out for a second, I was zecha this past week, in preparing for the Shabbos year, I happened to notice, in the Zohar HaKadosh, it mentions in one place, the fact that Rabbi Nizal uses this title here, Oyhavei Hashem Be'emes, these tzaddikim who love Hashem Be'emes, there's a pasuk in the Torah where it says, V'oyhavov kitzeis shemesh begvurosoi. Those who truly love Hashem are like the sun coming out in all its glory. The Zohar HaKadosh says that this title of V'oyhavov refers to the 36 great tzaddikim that exist in each and every single generation. The Gemara says at the end of Sukkah, Ashrei kol choychei loy, that in each and every single generation there are a minimum of 36 tzaddikim upon which the world rests, upon which the world depends on. The Zohar HaKadosh says that these are what are being alluded to by this word v'oyhavov, those that truly love Hashem. The word v'oyhavov is bigematria 36, being marames to this select elite unit of tzaddikim. The Zohar HaKadosh informs us, however, you should know that people don't know the whole story, that it's not really 36 tzaddikim in every generation, it's actually 72. The Zohar HaKadosh says there's a pasuk that says, Cholak libom, Hashem has divided their heart, the heart of Bnei Yisrael. Who are the lave of Bnei Yisrael? Who are the life-giving force of Bnei Yisrael? The tzaddikim. The Zohar HaKadosh says, Cholak libom. The word libom is bigematria 72. Hashem has divided the 72 tzaddikim in half. There are always a minimum of 36 in Eretz Yisrael and 36 lahavdil in Chutz Loretz. So true, there is this concept of the number of 36, but it's 36 in both sections of the world, in Eretz Yisrael and lahavdil in Chutz Loretz. Baruch Hashem.
Certainly would uphold the category of being one of those tzaddikim who don't consider any kind of reward, neither in this world or in the next. Nevertheless, the concept of increasing the Tzelem Elokim is valid even to one in that category. If so, I heard that Rabbeinu Zal, when he married his second wife, he made a condition with her that he wouldn't know her. If that's the case, then would that be limiting the Tzelem Elokim, or his motives in that case really unknowable?
Obviously, there were much deeper reasons than what we would understand in terms of why he conducted the relationship that way, number one. Number two, for example, we have certain cases in the Gemara. The one outstanding example in the Gemara of a tzaddik who didn't get married, according to some opinions, or some opinions there was kiddushin but no nisuin, is Ben Azai. Ben Azai was one of the great Tanaim in the Gemara. Now the question is, if this is the first mitzvah in the Torah to have children, and if this increases the Tzelem Elokim, what excuse conceivable could there be to avoid this? The Arizal says that Ben Azai knew that he had already been mashlim this mitzvah in previous Gilgulim completely. Therefore, this item didn't apply to him whatsoever at that point in time. So it's conceivable by Rabbi Nizal or by other tzaddikim like this that they know where a certain item they've completed already or it doesn't apply to them. by them we could say such a thing, that, you know, it's conceivable for him to take out such a condition. But the normal person has to assume that we play by the rules of the Torah. In other words, we try to fulfill all the mitzvahs of the Torah, the pshitas of the tmimus.
You see that rule that talks about tzaddikim, I mean, part of the plain person to then I mean, it seems to me that it requires a very high level of amunah.
Most definitely. It requires a high level of amunah and a very high level of unselfishness. I'm saying, to talk about this in real terms, which person could say that he's willing to give his whole life without having any personal interest whatsoever? That I'm willing to negate myself 24 hours a day, you know, 70 years of my life or 120 years of my life, that I would be willing to say that I'm not interested in any Olam Haba whatsoever. Now, you have one interesting case. The story is told with the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh that at a certain point in his life, he did a certain item where, because of this item, he heard a Bas Kol actually come out from heaven and say that he has lost all his Olam Haba. Finished completely. I don't remember what it is. It's mentioned in the Shvachei Baal Shem Tov exactly what he did. He did a certain item, possibly revealing a certain seed or something like that, where because of this, he was told, finish. You've lost anything and everything you've accumulated up to now is gone. And it's brought in the Shvachei Baal Shem Tov that his initial reaction was one of feeling destroyed completely. I'm saying, you have to picture the type of Mesiras Nefesh that Tzaddikim put into their Avodas Hashem. How much effort, how many hours and days and nights and superhuman effort that's being exerted, and to be told, poof, it's disappeared, he was completely shattered. And then the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said that he thought about it a lot, and he came to a conclusion that now I'll first be able to start serving Hashem. Because the fact remains, simply by my reaction to this baskel, it shows that up until now, when I was serving Hashem, it wasn't really serving Hashem, it was doing for myself. I was doing for myself. Once I've been told that there doesn't exist a possibility of a future for me whatsoever, that my future has been eliminated, now any mitzvah that I'm going to do, or any good deed I'm going to do, is going to be completely Kodesh Hashem. There's no way you could look at it otherwise. Nobody could ever say that I'm doing it for myself, for my Olam Haba, or anything like that. And he said he decided to start brand new serving Hashem with this type of commitment. Then a Bas Kol came out and said that because of this, because he realized this, and he was willing to forge ahead, 100% using all the fire rocket power that he was using up until then, negating himself completely, they told him, now you got everything back plus more. Not to say that it wasn't meant for real. When he was told he lost all his Olam Haba, it was a 100% accurate statement. It wasn't a joke, and it wasn't meant halfway. It was meant 100% solid. So here you see that there does exist such a metzias. Okay, Baruch Hashem. We'll start Torah Lamed Ches, and we put him on Tanina now. This Torah is not that long, and it's not that difficult, and it's going to present a very interesting concept that has many, many applications throughout the entire Torah. In Likutei Halachos, Rav Nosson Zal relates this to two basic items. One item is the law of Torah Duma. The second item is the concept of Ner Chanukah versus Ner Shabbos, as is explained in the Kislei Arizal. The difference in what's accomplished when a woman lights candles Friday night versus what's accomplished when a person lights candles on Hanukkah, Baruch Nias, and because of the difference between the two, that's why when Hanukkah comes out on Shabbos, meaning the day of Shabbos Hanukkah, the Ner Hanukkah is lit before the Ner Shabbos. We're going to see, based on this Torah, we're going to understand some of the concepts of Parah Aduma, plus some of the concepts of Ner Shabbos versus Ner Chanukah, plus a bunch of other items. Rabbein Zal says, Lefa'omim, at times, Hagodol hoylech v'noiseh ala hakoton. The greater one goes and travels to the lower one. For example, you have the case of Matan Torah on Har Sinai, where the Pasuk uses the terminology, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. Kaviyochol, Hashem came down to Bnei Israel. the case, you have another case where the Torah writes, Umoshe Olo El Ho'elekin. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Hashem. So we see that both of these items are presented throughout the Torah. You have the concept of Chayev Odom Lahachbil Pnei Rabbi Boregel. You have a concept of the student traveling to go see his Rebbe. And we have many cases in the Gemara where the Gemara tells stories of the Tanoim who went to visit their Talmidim on different occasions. So that Rabbeinu Zal says, Lifa'omim ha-godoil hoylech v'noisei la-koton. At times, the greater one goes and travels to the smaller one, or the one on a lower level, ulifa'omim lehepech. And at times, it's the reverse. The Hainu, Rabbeinu Zal explains, Shelifa'omim ha-tzadik noisei al-hamedina. At times, the tzadik leaves his home base, and he travels throughout the land. Umeir lahatalmidim, and he shines his light, he gives forth his light to those who are willing to accept from him, to his talmidim. Ulifonim, whereas at times, hatalmidim boim etzloi, the talmidim leave their homes, leave their place, and they come to the residence of the tzaddik, or to the beis medrash of the tzaddik. Veda, Rabbeinu Zal says, you should know, shezois habechino hi gedoila. Which one of these two is considered a greater, a higher level of Kiddusha? This one is considered a greater level. Which one? Dehainu kishehagodol noisea lahakoton. When the greater one travels to the one who's on a lower level, zois habechino hu gedoila biyoser. That's considered a higher level of Kiddusha. Why? Rabbeinu Zal is going to explain. Kize poshut. This is simple to understand. Shehakoton sorech lovoi lahagodol. It can be assumed as normal, natural, that the one who's on a lower level has to go to the one who's on a higher level. When you have an oni and an oshir, a person that's poor, that's lacking money, he doesn't have money for food or for clothing, and you have another person who has enough for himself and enough to give to other people, which one is it more normal to go make the request from the other one? It's the oni that normally goes to the oshir asking to receive from him. Kihu tzorech lekabel mimenu, because he's the one who's in need. He's the one who has the chisoroin that needs shlemus. Therefore, he goes looking to be mashlem his chisoroin. Ach lefa'omim, but at times, oiroi shel hagodol hu godol ma'oid ma'oid. At times, the light of the Rebbe is so great, is so powerful, whereby it would be impossible for this student to be able to receive from that light in its own place, because the light is so bright at its source, the intensity is so great, it would be too powerful. If the Talmud would come to draw from that location, it would be a blinding light. It would be too powerful. Al Kain, therefore, Muchroch Hagodol Lohirid Ulahachniatsmoi Eitzel Hakoton. Therefore, the greater one is forced to lower himself and to humble himself to the lower one, to the student, Velelech Elov, and to go to him. So that by this act alone of the Godoil leaving his base and going down to the place of the Koton, that alone will serve to curtail this light a little bit, to be mitzamtzim it a little bit, to allow the Koton to receive it without being damaged by it. So that Rabbeinu Zal is saying that in other words, you have a situation where the light of the Rebbe at a certain point in time is not that powerful. So because it's not that powerful, we don't have to worry that by the Talmidim coming to receive from him at his home base, the light will be too blinding or too powerful for them. You have other times where the Rebbe's light is so great that for the Talmidim to be receiving it at its home base, too powerful, it would be too much. And therefore, at a time like that, because the light is on such a high level, it forces the one who possesses the light to leave his place, to go down to the Talmud, to the Koton, and that act of leaving his base and going down, that's mitzamtzem, this super great light, allowing the katan to be able to receive from it. Nimtzo, Rav Enazal says, we see from here, kishehagodol tzorich leilech lahakotan, that at these times, when the greater one has to go down to the one who's lower, zehu migoidel oitzem ma'alosay ma'oikanal. This isn't a sign of poorness on the part of the Rebbe. It's not because the Rebbe has to go looking for Talmidim. He's at a loss, you know, for members of his shul, so he has to go out looking for them. It's because it's showing that at that point in time, he's on such a high level that to receive from him in his own base would be impossible. Therefore, he's forced to go out. Now Rabbeinu Zal says, Moshe Rabbeinu, Olav HaSholem, Hoye Godol, B'mayle, Kol Kach, Moshe Rabbeinu was so great, Ad She'afilu Lifnei Gedolim, Hoye Tzorich Lahakten Atzmoi. Where Moshe Rabbeinu, even when it came to dealing with the leaders of Klal Yisrael, for Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to deal with them on a one-on-one basis, he had to lower himself and constrict himself tremendously in order for them to be able to relate to him, in order for them to be able to receive from him. Ulaharois hachno negdom. He had to be able to show tremendous humbleness. He had to lower himself in order to be able to relate to them. Kemoshekosov, as the Torah Hakdosh testifies, v'ho'ish Moshe onov ma'oid mikol ha'odom. Moshe Rabbeinu was very, very modest. The literal translation is, Moshe Rabbeinu was more modest than all other people. Rabbeinu Zal here is giving a different translation. Moshe Rabbeinu was very modest, mikol ha'odom, even to deal with any type of person, even to deal with the greatest chachamim and the greatest tzaddikim in Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu had to show modesty. He had to step down towards them. Because Moshe Rabbeinu's position was so high and so exalted, he had to be onov ma'oid, mikol ha'adam. When dealing even with Aaron HaKayin, Moshe Rabbeinu had to lower himself tremendously to be able to relate to them. Hainu, afal pi shegam heim hoyu gedayla ma'oid, even though some of the Yidden were on a very, very high level, kigoyin Yehoshua v'Aaron, such as Yehoshua and Aaron HaKayin, im kol ze still, Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaSholem B'mayle Gedoylo V'atzuma Ma'oid. Moshe Rabbeinu was on such an incredibly high level, Ad Shehuchrach Lahakdin Atzmoy Ulahachmi Atzmoy Negdom. To the extent where Moshe Rabbeinu was forced to make himself smaller and to humble himself to them, Kidei Sheyuchlu Lekabel Oiroi Kanal, in order that they should be able to benefit from his light. Rabbeinu Zal says now, v'zeh b'chinas, this is what the Gemara tells us in Megillah, b'kol mokoim shata moitzei gedulosoi, shom ata moitzeyan v'sanusoi. That wherever you see greatness on the part of Hashem, there you see humbleness. That you should know that the humbleness is a sign not of weakness, not of deficiency. It's a sign that there's so high a light at that time that this light, it would not be possible to receive from unless there was a confinement, a constriction. Rabbeinu Zal explains, Shebechol mokoim sheyesh gadlus b'yoser, wherever we discuss a higher level, whenever we begin to discuss something that's on a much higher level, tzorich anovo v'katnus kidei sheyuchlu l'kabel ho'er kanal. It naturally follows that there's a requirement of modesty and a capacity, a capability of being able to constrict in order to be able to receive that light. For example, Lahavdil. If we talk about a genius, Lahavdil, the world's concept of an Einstein, a person whose mind was so far advanced, so much further than what's considered normal aptitude on the part of people, the fact that he was so much above them implies that the only way it would be conceivable for him to be able to relate to people is if he also had a capability of humbling himself, of bringing his super high level of mentality, of ingenuity, down to the level of people where people could relate to it. Otherwise, he remains a genius, but he has no connection to them. They can't benefit from him at all whatsoever. So Rabbeinu Zal is saying that when we talk about tzaddikim, the higher a level a tzaddik is on, the more it becomes necessary that in order for him to be able to relate to people, he better have within his cadre of tricks, of knowledge, of wisdom, he better have the wisdom of being able to humble himself, to bring himself down to their level, to bring his light down to their level in order for them to be able to relate to it. Otherwise, there's no way they can have any attachment, any association with him. Rabbi Nazal says, when the one who's on a lower level comes to the one who's on a higher level, in order to receive from him, and then the one who's on a higher level shines his light into this Talmud. And the main mission of such a union between a Rebbe and a Talmud is for the Rebbe to take the Talmud's Meichen de Katnus and to replace it with Meichen de Gadlus. For the Rebbe to take the deficiencies, the mental deficiencies of the Talmud and replace it with mental capacity. Give him new wisdom. Give him an expansion of the mind in order to be able to drink up a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom. That the Rebbe looks to shine a light into the Talmud, lahagdil datoy, to increase, to expand his mind, she is gadel mi katnusoy, it should become increased from its katnus, v'yena se godel, it should become enlarged, dehainu she yovoy lemeichen de gadlus, that the Talmud should reach a level called meichen de gadlus, where he's in a mode, in a frame of mind, where he's able to absorb a lot of knowledge. Shezehu b'chinas hamtoko. This is called a sweetening of din. These are terms that are used in Sifrei Kabbalah, meichen de katnus, meichen de gadlus, hamtoka sadinim, that whenever a person is in a state of mind, in a sad frame of mind, or he's in a frame of mind where he can't absorb a lot of knowledge. He's stam in a state of behola, confusion, or whatever it is, where he can't suck up, he can't sponge up a lot of knowledge. That's called a state of meichen de katnus. Meichen de gadlus means where a person's in a very happy frame of mind, in a very satisfied frame of mind, in a very calm frame of mind, where he's ready to be able to learn a lot. He's just ready to sponge up anything you're going to throw at him. One is called Meichen de Katnus, one is Meichen de Gadlus. Meichen de Katnus is referred to as a state of din, harshness, tzimtzum, constriction, a confined frame of mind. Meichen de Gadlus is referred to as a concept of chesed, kindness. Whenever we talk about expansion, harchava, it's always a concept of chesed. Whenever we talk about tzimtzum or sosum, closed, it's always a concept of din. So this concept of a Rebbe taking a Talmud from Meichen de Katnus to Meichen de Gadlus is a concept of Hamtoka Sadinim, sweetening the harshness. Rabbi Nazal says, at times, Meir boy al yedei ha'oras ponim v'nechomois. At times, the methodology with which the Rebbe shines this light into his student is through he'oras ponim, where he shows the student a lit-up face. He shows him a very happy, warm face, v'nechomois, and he gives him his chaskus. He speaks to him words that are mekariv him, that bring him close. Things aren't that bad, you're not doing that bad. He gives him all types of chizuk. Ulefa'omim, shemeir loy ponov beponim sechakois, where the Rebbe shines his light to the Talmud in a form of ponim sechakois. The Rebbe shows a happy face, anpinahirin, a lit up face. This is the terminology again that's used in the Zohar HaKadosh. Ulefa'omim, at times, eino yochay lekabel al yedei zeh. At times, the Rebbe sees that the student can't receive in this manner. The Talmud at that point in time is in the category of a log. The Zohar HaKadosh says that when you have a log that's damp and you can't light it, you want to use this log as part of a campfire. And because the log is damp, it's not roy to be able to function in this campfire. What do you do to the log? You beat it. By beating it, you knock out some of the moisture and you create indentations in it and everything where it's able to take on the fire much better. This is something that people know, people that are familiar in dealing with wood and dealing with making fires, they know that this is one of the items in how you deal with it. the Zohar HaKadosh applies this to a yid. The Zohar HaKadosh says that this is one of the reasons why Hashem punishes a person at times. If a person, if a Jew, shows a reluctance in accepting upon himself the light of the neshama, nera lekim nishmasotam, the neshama is considered a fire, a campfire. If a Jew's guf has become defiled to the extent where it can't serve as a log on this fire to help the neshama burn properly, how does Hashem deal with it? Hashem beats this piece of wood, this body, the guf, Hashem beats it mevachinlei in order to get it to accept the light of the neshama better, for the two to be able to live together in a more cohesive type of way. So Rabbein Azal says, at times the Rebbe sees that the Talmud can't receive, he's not worthy of receiving through Panim Seich HaKos, therefore he deals with him in this manner of O'o Delei Dolik Mevachinle, a piece of wood that doesn't accept fire upon itself, Mevachinle, you beat it. Meaning, Shetzorich Lohoyer Boy Al Yidei Yisurin, where the Rebbe shines the light to the Talmud via Yisurin, via punishment. Shetzorich Liyasroi Ulevazoisoi, he has to punish him and embarrass him and insult him. Kedei Levatel Oisoi, in order to nullify him, in order to break him down, Sheyucha Lekabel, so that he should be able to receive the light of the Neshama. In other words, when a Talmud sees that he's being shown this lack of Panim Seich HaKos, this is supposed to be a Musar to him, that obviously there's something lacking in him that has to be Mushlam. Obviously he's not on the right, he's not where he should be, and he has to try to fix himself up. He has to try to gird, tighten his belt, and start working harder in Torah and Tefillah and Mitzvahs and all of those things. Rabbi Nazal says, "Veda, and you should know, ki af al pi shehagodel tzorich lohirid atzmai, ulevatel atzmai tzas migdulosoi, kidei shiyuchal hakoton lekabel." Although we just told you that at times the Godel, the greater one, has to lower himself, he has to leave his home, leave his center, his base, and go down to this Koton to be able to teach him, to be able to bring him clothes. And because of this, the Godel is forced, levate latzmai tzas migdulosoi, when he's, during the time that he's going down, he's actually going down. He's losing some of his voltage. He's decreasing the voltage. He's decreasing his own momentum. This high that he's on in serving Hashem, he's forced to curtail it, to be able to go down, to relate to the world. Kidei sheyuchal ha-koton lekabel, in order for the koton to be able to receive, afal pikein, still, ein nechshav ze ha-giroin va-hefsid shel ha-godol, she-tzorech levatel oiroi lefishoh. This loss, this decrease that takes place within the Godoil, that he's forced to decrease his light, his momentum, his fire, for a limited period of time, this loss doesn't compare in any way keneged hatikun shenase b'hakoton, to the tremendous accomplishment that he achieves by the Koton, by the Talmud, shehu mesaknoi umagdiloi, that he perfects him and he heightens him. Kibitul v'katnas ha-godol hu rak l'fisho, because the wasting of time, in other words, the giving away of time and the lowering himself of the godol is a temporary item. It's an item that involves an hour or a day or a week or whatever unit of time is allocated to it. V'achar kach choyzer l'ma'alosoi. As soon as this tzaddik or this rebbe is finished with this intermission, he goes right back onto his own track, and he takes off from where he left off, and he starts rocketing ahead further on his own level. But with that amount of time and goodness that he gave over to the Talmud, to the Koton, he fixes him up, he puts him on a track where he's able to continue for days or months or years or for a lifetime because of the light that he received from the Rebbe during the time that the Rebbe spent with him. Rabbi Nazal says now, V'yesh chilukim be'inyin katnus v'hachnoas ha-godol eitzo ha-koton k'dei l'kabel oiroi kanal. There are many, many different manifestations of this concept of the godol lowering himself and humbling himself in order to be able to give the koton accessibility to his great light. Ki ha-koil l'fi ho-inyin. It all relates to the inyan, to the type of godel you're dealing with, the type of koton, the time, the place. All there are many, many factors that come into play in determining how this item is conducted. Lifa'omim hu bitnua ba'alma, at times it's with one motion, a tiny act of going down. It could be a look, it could be a statement, it could be one small move. And at times it involves an actual trip where the tzaddik, the godel, has to leave his own place completely and actually take on a trip in order to go out to be able to reach out to these ktanim. And it all depends on what the situation is. Rabbein Azal says, "Kemoiner shekova," just like when we have a candle that's about where its light has diminished, it looks like its light is about to go out. Kishiyesh poiktsas oir adayin, if the candle is still burning even a little bit, yichaylin lahadlikoi rak al yidei mashem ekarvanoi soiktsas lener hadoylek. It's possible to reignite this candle that's flickering, it's on its last limb, it's about to go out, by putting it near, by taking a solid candle, a solid match, and putting it close by, not even touching, but putting it right close by to that candle, you can get it to start up again. You take this candle and you hold it beneath, you hold it next to, alongside, a candle, a fire that is burning properly, and you see right away it starts up again solidly. It draws fire from it and it picks up solidly. That's because this original candle still had some light in it, therefore by just giving it a tiny infusion of light, it's able to take off again. But when a candle has gone out completely, then you can't turn it on at any distance. The only way you could turn it on then is by actually taking it over to an existing fire and putting it in that fire, or taking a solid fire and bringing it over to this candle that went out and turning it on. So Rabbi Nizal is explaining that this involves a tremendous judgment on the part of tzaddikim, to be able to judge what madrega the person is on at that time, to see how low his flame is at that time, to be able to see how much the godel has to reach out to the kotan in order to be able to get him to come close. Because naturally, it's an assumed fact that it's always better when the person helps himself, when the person brings himself to the tzaddik, rather than the tzaddik having to come to him. But at times, the tzaddik has to make a judgment where he sees that a person's on his last breath or something like that, where there the tzaddik goes, gives the Yisarusa Vaila completely. Just like when Hashem saw the Yidden in Mitzrayim, and Hashem saw that if they would have stayed there another second, Chas V'Shalom, it would have been the end for them. The Torah there says that Hashem went into Mitzrayim, Ani V'loi Malach, Ani V'loi Sorof, Ani V'loi Acher, because Hashem saw that if not, it would have been the end for them. Whereas once they were taken out of Mitzrayim, Hashem said, now we have to count the Sfira Saima. Now we have to do it. We have to climb the 49 levels reaching up to Hashem. The final move is Hashem's move, the Shuvah Elai or Shuvah Aleichem. The 49 levels that we climb to get close to Hashem. The 50th level, where Kaviyochel Hashem steps down to us. Why? Because that 50th level, again, note, B'mokoyim sh'atamaytse gidulasai, sh'amatamaytsean v'sanusai. You have these 50 levels of Bina, these 50 levels of Tshuva. The first 49, compared to the 50th, the first 49 would fit into a little pinky at the 50th. This Rav Nosson Zal mentions in Likutei Halachos, that when we talk about that Shar HaChamishim is something that's so, so high that it's millions of times bigger than the 49 Sha'arim before it. There, because the light of the Shara HaMishim is so tremendously great, therefore it was inconceivable for the Jews to climb to that 50th level. They were only able to climb the 49 levels, to count the 49 days of the Yemei HaSfira. The 50th level, which represents Ratzon, the Shara HaMishim, that super high level of Kedusha, there we don't count. We're completely silent, Kaviyochol, that's Hashem's move completely. There, the only way that we could receive from that super incredibly light, incredible high light, is not by us going towards it, but it actually has to come to us. Because we're talking about such an incredibly high level of light, the only way we could have an achiz in that light is Kaviyochol Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. That on Shavuos, the light has to come towards us. I just want to, if possible, sneak in these two items from the Likutei Halacha, is just to close with those items, and then we'll take any questions. Rav Nissenthal explains, this is why we know that one of the highest forms of purification that exists in the Torah is the mitzvah of Porah Aduma. Porah Aduma, we're talking about such an incredible high level of Kiddusha that even a person who was Tamei Meis, which is the most severe form of Tumah that exists within Judaism, with this was such a high level of Tahara that it was able to be Metahir a Tamei Meis. Note that Parah Aduma is unique among all other Karbonos that were dealt with in the Beis HaMikdash. All other Karbonos, Maaseho Bifnim, the Korban was brought in the Beis HaMikdash. The Parah Aduma had to be Bedavka Maaseho Bechutz. The whole Avodah of the Parah Aduma had to be done outside the Beis HaMikdash. Outside the main center of the Beis HaMikdash. Why? What's the symbol in that? What does that show us? What is that referring to? We're talking about, in Parah Aduma, we're talking about such an incredible high level of Kiddusha that for the person to receive that inside the Beis HaMikdash itself, impossible. It would be an exploding, a blinding type of light. This super high level of Kiddusha must be brought outside. The Maaseh B'chutz, by taking the Parah Aduma outside, the Yeshus of the Parah Aduma outside of the Beis HaMikdash, that shows this concept of Vayered Hashem, where this super high level of Kiddusha is coming to, is taking a step towards this person to be masaking him. So too we find another interesting item about Parah Aduma that relates to exactly what Rav Enizal said here. The fact that one of the laws of Parah Aduma is that the one who sprinkles the ashes, he becomes Tomei. He becomes Tomei for a short period of time, till nightfall. The one, the Tohar, the person who's pure, who's looking to help this person who's super Tomei, the one who's doing the sprinkle of the ashes, he becomes Tomei for a limited time. Through his act of becoming Tomei just for a short period of time, he's Metaher, this other person who's Tomei Meis, who's super Tomei, forever until he messes himself up again. So here we see a perfect correspondence to what Rabbi Nizal said here, that although the tzaddik does lose out a little bit, there's no question, we see this person actually becomes Tomei, the Metaher, the one who's doing the pouring of the ashes actually becomes Tomei a little bit, the tzaddik does lose out for a short period of time, for the time that he's giving away to these other people, to his talmidim, to the people he's being makarev, but still, Hashem says that the overall benefits far, far exceed this temporary loss that the tzaddik suffers for this item. This is one item that Rav Nosenthal discusses in the Likutei Halachos, in Hilchas, in Choshen Mishpat, in Hilchas Matana, Halacha Gimel, I think it's Eis Chaf Aleph, that's where Rav Nosenthal has a discussion. He's talking about Parshas Achay, the four Parshas there, and when he discusses Parshas Parah there, based on the topic there, he relates it to this chapter in the Likutei Moran. There's another place in the Laws of Shabbos, where Rav Nosenthal is discussing how Chanukah, the Ner Chanukah, relates to the Ner Shabbos. The Arizal explains that one of the differences between Ner Chanukah and Ner Shabbos is that when we talk about the light of Ner Chanukah, Kaviyochel, the light of Hashem, reaches way down to the lowest level. The Ner Chanukah is lit bedafka, below 10 tefachim, below 10 tefachim off the ground. In other words, it's supposed to be between, preferably between 7 tefachim off the ground and 10 tefachim off the ground, because the Gemara says that normally we say that the light of the Shekhinah never went within 10 tefachim of the ground, and on Chanukah, because of the fantastic miracle that took place on Chanukah, the Shekhinah reached all the way down to the Jews at that time. Whereas, when it comes to the Ner Shabbos, the Arizal says that although there is a going down where the Shekhinah lowers itself to shine its light into Bnei Yisrael. The fact is that on Shabbos, all the Olamos have a tremendous aliyah. The Olamos go up in a tremendous way. So it's not as if the Shekhinah is reaching all the way down to help them. In a sense, the worlds themselves are rising up a little bit, and the Shekhinah is meeting them, is bringing them up, and shining to them as they're moving up. This is one of the differences between Ner Chanukah and Ner Shabbos. That by Ner Chanukah, it's a concept where the Shekhinah is reaching all the way down. It's just the Shekhinah going all the way down to reach down to the ones who are on the lowest level. By Ner Shabbos, it's a concept where everything has an aliyah and moves up. And then while it's moving up, the Shekhinah is beaming its light to it. Therefore, the Arizal says it's only logical to say that when we're dealing with Ner Chanukah and Ner Shabbos, which one, although normally the rule is Toder Rishenai Toder Toder Koidim, that logically Shabbos is more holy than Chanukah and Shabbos is more often than Chanukah, Shabbos should be first. But here, because Ner Chanukah involves the reaching to ground level, and Ner Shabbos involves once you're already moving up, obviously you start from ground level and then you move up. That's this concept where we see this dual concept. A concept of the Godel reaching down to the Koton completely. A concept of at times the Koton coming up to the Godel. That's the distinction between this Ner Shabbos and Ner Chanukah. Baruch Hashem.
Before, earlier in the chat, we spoke about the Tzaddik as sometimes having to so-called strike the log in order to make it be more receptive to receiving fire. And then it spoke about dinim. So I'd like to understand this, the concept of dinim, whether or not Hashem, in striking a person, making him more susceptible to the light, who's really supposed to be doing the striking? Is it the tzaddik who sometimes does this striking in the same manner as Hashem?
100%.
And then when Hashem, Chaviyokal, is doing the striking, is that also an aspect of Hashem coming down, being mitzamsen in the form of dinim in order to bring the person up?
Most definitely. The term din itself, when Hashem is acting in a manner of din, it means kaviyochel Hashem is being metzamtzem himself. When Hashem is acting in a manner of chesed, it's a concept of harchova on the part of Hashem himself, kaviyochel.